Hello, my name is Tina Amini, and welcome to IGN's Red Dead Redemption 2 spoiler cast. I'm joined by Destin Legarry.
Bam.
John Ryan.
Howdy.
And Casey DeFreitas.
Hello.
Thank you guys for joining. We have a lot to talk about.
Oh my God, so much.
So much to talk about. There's horses, there's feelings, the characters, the story. We're going to be talking about our favorite moments, the ending. The second ending, the
spoiler
third
warning.
Ending.
The third ending.
Yeah, there's all many endings. The post game, there's tons to talk about.
Yeah, if you missed the giant spoiler warning that came up at the head of this video.
For the spoiler cast.
Yeah, do not watch the rest of this unless you finish the game.
Yes, please don't.
Not like 100% completion, because that's like impossible.
Yeah. Exactly, especially at this
just
point.
Just the story.
Let's be real. Yeah.
Just finish the story.
Finish both epilogues and then come back.
And then come back to this. So let's start off kind of generally speaking. What did you guys think worked? What did you like? What didn't you like?
So for me, story-wise, one of my favorite parts was how they crafted this group of protagonists, sort of.
Anti-protagonists.
And we kind of watch them fall apart as a group. And it leads right into the next game, the original Red Dead Redemption, and seeing how they've fallen apart and he becomes totally evil. The Vanderlyn. Mr. Vanderlyn himself.
Mr. The Vanderlyn.
Yes.
It's a really natural progression.
Yeah. You can kind of see where he starts breaking at the seams, you know, as a character. And I haven't seen that in a game before.
Yeah.
Not done this well.
I think that, I mean, we'll get into this in a couple minutes, I'm sure, because I know you and I have
We can get right into it.
No. We'll get there. As a whole, I really, truly love the whole shebang. I think Rockstar does a really phenomenal job of telling the story that they want to tell with the gang and with Arthur and Dutch and John and Sadie and the rest, and then also giving you the space to tell your own story in the world at large. And I think for me, honestly, like that's the big draw for me of most Rockstar games is the world itself. So for me, it's much more a game about the world as opposed to the main story, but the story itself is solid.
So your favorite character is the world?
I think that's it right there.
Yeah,
my favorite character is everyone. I love Arthur. I do.
He's flawed in a good way.
Exactly, yeah. Like, the fact that it's a story about a man, like, reckoning with his demons, basically. Like, being like, have I wasted my life? Oh, no, I've wasted my life. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's great. It's not even just the reckoning of demons. It's also just the fact that he's, like, struggling to figure out, am I doing the right thing? It's like a morality thing where he's trying to figure out, who am I following? Am I following them for the right reasons? And it's so fascinating to see that as Dutch unravels, see him kind of grapple with that.
Yeah. He's loyal to Dutch to a fault. Yeah. And it's really sort of fascinating see someone. Exactly.
Yeah.
I came into this game having never played the first one and knowing nothing about it, literally nothing. I didn't know that Dutch was destined to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
I was watching.
Which is fascinating for you. Yeah.
Yeah. That must, I'm really curious to know.
And they did a really fantastic job at not giving anything away. They treated it as its standalone story without assuming that the player already knew what was going to happen. Because I had no idea until I was very near the end and then heard people talking about it in the office. And it's like, oh yeah, like it's crazy that you get to see Dutch turn into the bad guy. And I was like, what? Like, oh no.
I felt really bad. Yeah. We spoiled it for Kirk.
Oh,
we were talking about it. Yeah, IGN's very own Kirk Clarkson, if you're watching this, I'm still really sorry about that.
Bad.
I sent him a memo and was like, hey, blah, 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 Dutch being a bad guy. And he was like, Dutch is the bad guy? Like, oh no, I've been so bad.
Yeah, I had no idea. And that was the kind of thing where from the very first mission, I had a bad taste in my mouth about Micah because of how he chased Sadie around the house. And I was like, that's not cool.
He's gross as hell.
He's an on-the-nose villain.
Yeah, but Dutch presented himself as a very honorable man, even if he is a thief and a gang leader.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's okay, you're safe now. And that kind of like told me, like, okay, he is the leader of a gang of bad guys.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, come on, like we're bad guys. We murder, we steal. We're not good people.
We're not the most wholesome.
But he's not the worst.
Yeah, I mean,
not to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really interesting that you couldn't really tell about Dutch until the end, because since I knew that he was going to end up being the bad guy, there were these moments where I was like, that's right there. Like, that's a little piece peeking through.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me that it didn't really fully come through for you until the end. And I think that speaks to, for Arthur Morgan, the same thing where, like, he doesn't really know. And this is somebody he spent most of his mature life with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to just turn around basically to your father figure and say, actually, now I'm going to just completely abandon you.
Yeah. And you're a dick, Dad.
I also, I had faith in Dutch as a stressed person who wanted to do his best by his people and didn't know how to do that, and he kept trying, and I started questioning him when he kept repeating himself, just one more heist, just one more, just one more. It's like, oh, that's, you keep saying that, man. Like, yeah. how many times can we believe you? And I didn't start distrusting him as a character until after that bank heist went entirely wrong and we ended up
the one in at the end of chapter 4, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that we're like fully into this Dutch conversation, let's get fully into it. No, I'm prepared for it. This is the most fascinating part, I think. I had the same kind of idea where it felt like he was just getting into harder crimes to get into harder crimes to as a solution.
Harder as in more difficult or harder as in more
harder brutal? As in more, yeah, more desperate. So more in the sense
more
of
more risky.
Yeah, exactly. So in the beginning it was very much like there was a possibility that, you know, they'd be getting away with a score and not come up with like a huge bounty on their head. But I liked what Charles said at one point, and I think it was towards the end, he was talking to Arthur and he said, all this death and for what? Just so we can have enough money and run away from what we've done? And it's true, and that's the piece that like that Dutch never really understood, that like he was getting them further into their hole, and that's what Arthur was trying to tell him the whole time.
It's interesting that you say that, because that's potentially why he was so blind to what Micah was doing, because in retrospect it's pretty obvious. He shows up with two strange guys, he is broken out of prison, kills everybody in the town, and then sort of runs away. They're constantly getting caught after that moment, and Dutch is
an
intelligent,
saying, like, someone must be a mole here. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And Dutch is quite intelligent. It's almost like he didn't want to see the evil in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, the more
including
desperate
including himself.
You,
yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Because, I mean, that's like the more desperate you get in a situation to retain control, not necessarily over a group of people, just like in your life in general, like the easier it is to say, like, oh, this person agrees with me, so I can trust them. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, when you have someone like Micah, who, like, everybody else can be like, this is a piece of shit. I hate this guy.
Yeah.
But when he's acting all sycophantic and he's like, no, it's like, trust me, I got your best interest at heart. I just want what's best for everybody. It's fine. Like,
It's difficult to see someone spiraling out of control and become that desperate that they will believe whatever they want to hear to grasp onto their false sense of reality. Yep. And that's kind of what we have with Dutch, because you have someone backing up his beliefs and telling him he's right, even though from the outside looking in, that's obviously wrong. It's the devil on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Or Arthur really did have his best interest, but Arthur's opinions unraveled how he saw reality and how he saw loyalty and how he saw what he thought is best. And that cognitive dissonance was just too much for him. And he couldn't believe Arthur.
So JR and I have been having this like massive debate about Dutch. And I think we actually agree. But the biggest thing for me is that I feel like Dutch is the kind of character where it's really his ego driving him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's, you know, he believes in himself. And anytime like Arthur brings up something very valid and says, we shouldn't have done that heist, or we shouldn't do this, or why did you kill that poor woman who just led us through the tunnel? You know, she was helping us out. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Every time he tries to confront Dutch, the problem is he has to confront his own ego. And that becomes like the biggest obstacle for him. And that turns him into the villain, because he's essentially like too afraid to confront the fact that like maybe other people doubt him at
all.
So
that's the thing for me, is that I don't think by the end of the game
this is our debate.
Dutch isn't really a villain. He's just kind of this beleaguered dude who sees all of this bad shit happening around him. And he's just like,
refresh my memory. Doesn't he murder his girlfriend basically in cold blood? Or was
that's Mrs. Grimshaw. That's Mrs. Susan.
Which like deserved, but you know.
But like also totally not though.
No, because she wasn't actually the mole.
She's not
do anything. She only talked to them.
No,
we
she
find
did
out
though,
later.
Didn't she?
No, we learned the Pinkertons later. Tell us at one of the very last missions that Molly never talked.
Yeah, she didn't give him up. She didn't do it. It was all Micah.
She also ratted the group
she
out.
Came in and told everyone that because she was so desperate for Dutch's attention. Like,
that's just dumb.
I thought about that. Like, every time she tried to talk to you, Arthur and everyone else would just cast her to the side and not say anything. And I was thinking, this is going to come back to bite all of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just ignoring this poor woman.
The very first
she
time,
she's
like,
so
hey,
cold
Arthur, have
happened.
You seen Dutch around? I'm like, oh, this is going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so, like, my real issue with the Dutch arc is that we sort of see him as a man, like, yes, he's totally, like, puts his escape, his needs, his desire to put and, like, get out of the situation that he's in ahead of the rest of the group. And that is a shitty thing to do. But, like, what I don't see is the arc between Okay, so in the first Red Dead, I know you haven't played this, but in the end of the first Red Dead, there's this mission where it's the first time that John and Dutch are face-to-face for the first time mm-hmm. after ostensibly years after that moment that comes at the end of the second epilogue.
Yep.
And they have their little repartee, and then Dutch is about to escape, couldn't get away, almost scot-free, and decides, oh, you can see it on the screen right here, if you're watching the video version.
He has a hostage.
He has a hostage, and he's then cornered. To get out of the situation, he's almost about to get out the door. He is out the door. He can be totally fine if he just walks out the door right now, but instead he murders this woman for no reason other than to say, fuck you, John Marston.
And he does have moments where he does that.
He doesn't, though.
Where he no, he has moments where he just pulls the trigger because he wants to one up somebody.
Not in two, I don't think. I don't think
he murders that old lady.
But when
there's a difference. There's no reason for that.
But there's a difference between I'm paranoid, so I'm going to kill this person because I think they'll squeal on me, mm-hmm. versus I'm just going to kill this person for sport.
What about Angelo Bronte?
He killed
that person because he challenged him.
True.
Angelo Bronte was like, oh, I get it. We're of the same ilk in the sense that, you know, you have a way with words and you're actually just manipulating every moment.
It's the same thing with Cornwall. Cornwall, Leviticus Cornwall. You just shot
Cornwall
that guy.
Cornwall is the only one that I think of that I think I really agree.
Angelo Bronte was like revenge. They kidnapped the child.
But I mean, he had, you know, with the Braithwaite woman, he burned their entire plantation down, killed all her sons. So I think we pretty much balanced it out.
Angelo Bronte bruised his ego.
That's what it was. It bruised his ego. It had everything to do with,
Dutch.
I think it was because he was insulted because the guy was like, oh, you look dirty. You should clean up for the party. And he just didn't like that insult.
But Angelo Bronte set them on that mission to go rob the thing that had nothing in it.
Yeah.
And his plan was for them to die, but they didn't.
So
it was a revenge story.
That's my thing, in my mind. For all of those kills, which are admittedly really brutal, and where you see that psychopathic part of Dutch, for every one of those, you also see a moment where he is beleaguered and regretting what he has to do and sad. And it feels like they're trying to make him sympathize. I don't think it is. I think based on the very end, when, depending on what ending you got, when Arthur is either lying there, all tuberculosis-y, or he's sitting there with knives in his ribs. There's a bunch of endings that are super fun. We'll get to that in a second. But
he dies. That's the end.
Arthur's lying there dying, Dutch has this genuine really bummed out look about him. And it's like those moments I feel are genuine for him.
That's how you read his facial expression in that moment?
Yeah, I don't think it was evil or malice or anything. I think it was just conceit. I think it was he's giving up.
I think so too, but I think it was also just wrapped up in this idea of he felt his own failure. And so it wasn't even about, oh, Lenny died and Hosea died and everyone else died and the whole camp that depended on me at one point in time is going to be struggling forward now because of the decisions I made. It's more about I failed. I'm not as hot shit that I thought I was.
Yeah.
Which I would say is pretty evil.
Yeah. Well, I think down to the core, he's just a manipulative narcissist.
100%.
He almost is incredibly charismatic, and he only does that because he needs other people to see him the way that he sees himself. And when anyone ever challenges that, it bruises his ego and he punishes that person for doing it.
Yep. Exactly. Which is what I felt Angelo Bronte was. But this idea of like the ego thing is really interesting to me because I think that he actually never really in the arguments with Arthur, I think he never actually addresses what Arthur is accusing him of. He's like, listen, dude, I'm just trying to tell you, you're going a little overboard here.
Right. And he's just like, no, stop just like, not having faith in me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, how do you not have loyalty? What happened to the loyalty?
Yep. And I think that's great. But I would have loved to see a little bit more of
setting the scene for that?
Setting him up as being okay with his more psychotic urges for unsubstantiated reasons. Like Bronte, the woman in the cave, Cornwall, all of those, if you're a fucking crazy person, can make excuses for those.
That's what he wants out of you. Don't fall into his
trap. No. What I'm just saying is he can rationalize it in his own mind, except for that woman in the bank in Red Dead 1.
So in Red Dead 1, I think he does that because he needs a distraction to allow him time to get away. And if he hadn't done that and they weren't trying to save her during those moments,
they were not going to save her and they knew it.
I think it was planned not. I mean, it's all malicious.
You saw it was a means to an end?
It was a means to an end. It wasn't just because he's a murderer.
All right, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think his fellow gang members feel like it is like they sense that there's something extra aggressive about it, because when he drowned Angelo Bronte, or they actually reference
there's
early
discomfort.
On. Yeah, there's discomfort.
Yeah, oh,
there's
yeah,
tension in the gang, and it indicates, I think, this unraveling that Dutch is going through, where once upon a time they could have faith in him. And so he is charismatic, and he's a very capable gunslinger. So there's you can tell that there's like reasons why people have been behind Dutch for so long.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. Like, he is this person who's brought them through, but then he has these moments where he takes things overboard because his ego is taken over and he's like, I'm the leader and everything I say goes.
Yeah, I do. And I do really like that. It's just like, I feel like there could have been a little bit more upfront about that. Like, there's this great conversation that Arthur has with Sadie in there towards the end of the game, where he tells her a story about when Dutch, he was younger, he'd robbed a house and Dutch was like really pissed at him for it. And he was basically said like, that dude was too poor to rob. And what you did was no different than what the government does. That's why we fight against them.
He does have morals. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though I think there was this moment of a little bit of redemption. there was this tiny moment of redemption where
disgusting.
When he like, I mean, I think he used the word, it's an appropriate word.
Yeah.
So he like, when he gets up and just immediately he's just like, they took Jack, like we're going. And like everyone, he took everyone. And also that moment where you're coming up on the house.
Oh, dude, that was so good. That was like, so good.
Yeah. I took 20 screenshots. It was just.
Oh, me yeah,
it was
I
just a like really great, powerful moment because you roll deep and you go in and you're just like, at that moment, it's like everyone remembers this is why we're behind Dutch, because when one of us gets messed with, he like really goes for it.
Well, they really are a family.
Yeah,
they really are a family. And especially, you know, for a child. So I think there are these moments where there's no gray area and Dutch can kind of prove himself again and also throw his whole gang off balance. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, I don't know. Like now he's being like normal Dutch again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it's just that.
That's how those people are in real life, too. Like I've known people like that and they will go one way and the other and you never know which way it's going to go, and you want to trust them because they've proven themselves before.
Yes,
but
exactly.
At the end of the day, like
it's the summation that you have to consider.
Yeah. You just gotta stop giving people the benefit of the doubt.
Which is why I think it's such a beautiful caricature, because that is something that's so relatable that, you know, we've probably all run into somebody like that in the past before. Yeah. And his classic avoidance measures too, of like not even arguing the argument. He's arguing that you're even arguing the argument.
Yes.
Right.
Like what genius.
I hate it so much.
Yeah. Exactly.
They did such a good job.
It's good
character.
And bad. Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I found myself wanting to give him the benefit of the doubt. Way past I should have, like,
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, no part of me like dislikes him as a character. Like I still really dig what they've done with Dutch. There, it's just like I would have liked to see a little bit more, like just a scotch
more setup is what you wanted.
Yeah, well, but especially because of the way this game ends. Mm-hmm. Like from the very end of that last mission, Red Dead Redemption, into the epilogue and into the end of the epilogue and the second epilogue and then the post game. All of this is just spilling over itself into the first game.
Even when we reach the conclusion of Dutch's story in the original game, you realize that he didn't really give up on his beliefs.
No.
But he believes that they can't be obtained anymore. And he just kind of accepts his fate and falls.
He's giving up on the world and not himself.
Yeah.
Which is...
Wait, hold on.
Another egotistical.
Yeah, that's some bullshit. But
so there's this moment with Dutch to kind of like, you know, wrap up our conversation with him as a villain, strictly speaking. How did you guys feel when it was revealed that he was hanging out with Micah the whole damn time?
Oh, at the end of Epilogue 2?
Yeah. So the door opens, you know, you're having this shootout with Micah and the door opens and there's Dutch, this bastard who, you know, has been in hiding and we had no idea. And the whole time, I think, like, the conversations you're having with the other surviving gang members is that, you know, we don't know where Dutch is, but it doesn't sound like there's ever this connotation that they might be together. Mm-hmm. And so, I felt so betrayed when that door opened and Dutch was there and he's just been hanging out with Micah of people.
Where else was he supposed to go? Because
on his own.
In his mind, that's the last remnant of his group, basically, right? And he doesn't
know. The
only person
has faith left in him.
Correct. And,
right.
And he doesn't know that Micah has betrayed him.
But
he does. Yes, he fucking
so
does.
He's in denial. Everyone's like, come on.
Nobody's ever told him that information directly.
Arthur did immediately.
Yes, did.
Arthur,
yes,
as soon as he gets back to the cave, he's like, he did it. He fucking did it. This guy did.
And then in this scene, too, which you can see that we're playing right now, if you're watching the video version, John Marston shows up, too, and he says, come on, Dutch. Like, you know.
Right.
You know that Micah was the rat. And it's just because Dutch
like, look at his mustache. He's evil.
It's because Dutch is consistently just trying to believe in his story. He doesn't want to believe in any other story. Mm-hmm. Which, like, I'm insulted. Why would you believe that Micah's a good guy and like, Arthur's the bad guy? Arthur's clearly...
Because Arthur disagreed with him.
Exactly.
Right. And, like, I think that was the thing there for me, that it was just like, they made it. He wasn't like villainous. He was just weak. And like, I think that's a great character choice.
His strength was weirdly his weakness.
Right. Yeah. His charisma, his ability to bring people together, which is very much what drew the gang to him in the first place, ended up being what ultimately was his downfall. And made him as weak as it did at the end there. And it was just like, I don't know, maybe I'm just like sad because it's just a bummer in general.
It's such a bummer.
I hated that epilogue's ending. I hated it. I thought, I just didn't even know how to feel because it came
with Dutch and
with Dutch and Micah together.
Yeah.
Because it just came so out of left field for me.
Yeah, it kind of, for me, it was a little unnecessary.
It's my favorite scene of the whole game.
Really?
Yeah.
And Dutch just walks off after that. And then
that's all Dutch
does. That's the second time he does that, though.
Exactly. He walks off because he's fulfilling the promise to Arthur to take care of John Marston in his own way.
By not murdering him?
He doesn't murder him, and he leaves him all the money that he ever earned from the end of the game. He leaves him the loot that was entitled to him. And that was his promise to Arthur earlier in the campaign.
So here's the thing.
So he finally realizes that Micah is a betrayer. He murders Micah. And he fulfills his promise to Arthur, and that's why I love that scene.
Yeah, I mean, he murders Micah because it's like, look, it's either you murder Micah or you murder John. And like, I think in this moment, you literally just can't murder Micah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think with this ending, for me at least, like, it felt a little bit unnecessary. Like, I don't think we needed
just
to see.
Have
just
Dutch
he's like, hey, he's back.
Hung out with
look
him.
At him. You still don't like him anymore.
Well, so the thing I liked about it actually, because I felt so betrayed, and I actually liked that I felt this like very powerful emotion upon seeing Dutch be there hanging out with Micah. And I think it was because for me, it really solidified, like, you are that lost. Like, you are that much not the Dutch that I knew and thought you were, even though I've played Red Dead 1.
Yeah.
Interesting. I feel like, I don't know, for me, it seems like that I got that when he left Arthur. When he walked away from Arthur dying on the side of a mountaintop, that was that for me.
Yeah. Which actually, the first time he walked away from you, I was like, dude, you knew I was going to get out of that. Like, why did you do that at this point?
To me, this is also this Dutch. This is his death as who he was throughout the whole of Red Dead Redemption 2. And he becomes the character we meet in Red Dead Redemption 1. Broken, flawed. He's lost Arthur, his trusted right-hand man, to the disease that he had. And he totally fell for Micah's ploy. And he just walked away from everything. He walked away from all of it into the original game, and he started over. He still was evil, but yeah, I don't know. I really thought it was sort of poetic, to be cheesy.
Ain't nothing cheesy about poetry.
Ending.
Well, but it's a good point that it does kind of like contextualize the end, or like the whole of Red Dead 1. It does contextualize it in the degree that like this is who we knew in Red Dead 1. Like, this is the character wholly. And actually, like, thinking about Red Dead 1 and how I was playing through it, I didn't really get Dutch as a character, I think, as much as I do now, having played through the experiences, like a prologue experience with him. So I do, like, you know, if we're talking about, like, this is one of the things we want to talk about is, like, the ending. Like, how does that impact our experience, our understanding of the original game?
So first off, going back to the original game, the story's all over the darn place.
Yeah.
You end up in Mexico, and there's some revolutionary
guy. Yeah, the first game has some pacing issues to be.
And it had a lot of the core mechanics that we love about Red Dead Redemption 2, and there was sort of this open world that you could also explore. But the characters were almost caricatures of who we get to learn about in Red Dead Redemption 2, and I'm so glad that they were able to modernize the game, and I really, really hope once we've played through the epilogue and we can see that all of Red Dead Redemption 1 is in there, it would be so cool if Rockstar allowed us to experience that story, like, did a retelling of it to finalize.
I mean, the fact that it's all there, like, I feel like that's definitely something that is a possibility on the horizon, because, like, I mean, there's been that
why
leak from
is
a while
it there,
ago.
If not?
Well, because there's been that leak from a while ago of somebody managed to get into Mexico, and I don't think there's anything really to that now, but, like, that's sure. They could potentially release that as an expansion or DLC later down the line. I think there's a lot that playing through the first off, I really loved playing through the epilogues for, I think, what for me is a really weird reason, because I played through Red Dead 1, you know, within the year or so leading up to 2's release. And the epilogues for me, like, all of that, from getting a job at Pronghorn Ranch to, you know, kind of splitting up with Abigail for a while, to being a bounty hunter with Sadie, to buying the property in West Elizabeth.
And building it. You build the house.
First off, great montage. Yeah. Super fun. Yeah. But all of that.
We'll get to that.
All that really hurt. Like every. And I know I've told you this before.
Because
like,
you know what it's building towards?
Exactly. So everything that happened, every story beat for me that was good where, you know, John gets a job and the guy who owns the ranch really likes him. He's like, you're a good hand. Mm-hmm. And then I see John Morrison getting shot. Mm-hmm. I see, you know.
That's already ruined for me. So.
Yeah, sorry. Spoilers for a decade-old game.
We did say this was the spoiler cast. Sorry, yep. Case.
Fine.
But I mean, that's the thing, though. It's like, you know, I see that. I see him getting the deed to his house, and then I see him getting shot by a million army guys. I see them building the house and Abigail and Jack coming back to live it. And then I see Jack next to John and Abigail's graves going off into the world. This is like a 20-something-year-old kid. Like, all of that, that whole 5 to 10 hours after Arthur dies fucking broke me, like, every second, and I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's, you know, you're building, you know what you're building towards, but at the same time, it's almost this existential question of, like,
yeah.
Well, would you go back and do it any differently?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. knowing what you know.
Exactly.
But I like the dedication that goes into, like, you know, building this new life.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, John is very dedicated towards going towards.
So usually in video games, I don't like missions with children, and I, because I played Red Dead Redemption 1, I have the context of Jack as a character. I'm really interested to hear what Casey would think about those missions with Jack going fishing and mm-hmm. the dog. What did you think about that?
So I don't actually think Red Dead Redemption 2 did a good enough job to make me attach to John Marston as a character. I don't know his story. I don't know much about him. And in Red Dead Redemption 2, I know that now. But you barely have any one-on-one time with John. Like, you save him in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
You blow up a bridge. You save him from prison.
You steal some sheep.
Okay, you steal some sheep with him. What else did you do with John?
The oil tank thing.
I mean,
John.
You have a bunch of missions with John.
Yeah,
but you most of those missions, like, it's all about Arthur being like, "Ah, you're a fucking idiot."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then you're not so stupid anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's
well,
all
something
of that.
Happened between them in the past, and then mm-hmm. later on, Arthur clearly respects him a little bit more after he regains that trust. For me, it was so awesome seeing him in the wilderness. I'm like, it's Marsden.
Look,
we're saving Marsden. And we kind of help him become the character that he comes in the original. But yeah, that's why I was really wondering. To you, he's not fleshed out enough in the sequel.
Yeah, I really don't think he is. I felt more attachment to Charles and Javier and Lenny.
Lenny. So,
Lenny!
Yeah, and Sadie,
Lenny!
Of course. Like, I love Lenny, like, way more so than I felt any kind of attachment to John. And I think they did that because they know that players already have an attachment to John because they've already played the other but I didn't.
Well, I do think that, like, playing through the epilogue helps with that a little bit in the sense that, like, you know, you're finally getting to play as John Marston again mm-hmm. and, like, remembering what those roles were. So obviously we have a little bit of a different association having played through the first one.
I feel like the epilogue, though, I love the way that it made me feel in relation to the first game, but I also feel like it does some weird things to the first game because of it. Mm-hmm. So, like, how far have you guys explored into the New Austin state? A lot?
All over.
Okay, so have you been to Armadillo, for example?
Mm-mm.
So
the town?
Yeah, the town. So
They
sort of narratively explain away all most of the characters that you know and love. But this still kind of breaks Red Dead lore. And, you know, I'm not usually one to try and be like a purist in that respect, but, like, it's weird for me to have John's story go from being like, I get out of the life with my wife and my son. Mm-hmm. We bought a ranch and I've been a rancher for 8-9 years. And then the government says, we have to drag you back in, to get out of the life, built a ranch, have my kids there. Now I'm going to go rob a train every 3 days
mm-hmm.
for the rest of my life until Edgar Ross shows up. Or, like, the first thing that I did in Armadillo was I walked into the general store and I murdered Herbert Moon. Like, I know that, like, you know, it's not canon, but, like, also, like, it kind of is to me now. Like,
it's your story.
Yeah, but now if I go back to Red Dead 1, like, Herbert Moon's right there being his super terrible self, and I'm just like...
Oh. Well, that's what the post-game is.
At least it gave you the satisfaction of this alternate reality where you get to kill all the characters.
Where I get to kill him before I learn he's a real piece of shit. Yeah.
So let's jump over to our favorite moments in the game.
Right.
We have a few crossovers, mm-hmm. but who wants to kick it off?
I think we can all agree that we really loved that Drinking with Lenny
yep.
quest.
Lenny!
There you go.
I legitimately...
It's so beautiful.
It's such a good... It's like a fun mission. It's yeah. a weird break in the dour action that mm-hmm. you're kind of in the middle of there. And it also does this really cool... Like, I think that that is the best drunk mission oh in a God. Video yeah. game mm-hmm. because it actively captures, like, if even what down to the like. Button prompt commands where mm-hmm. it's like, instead of greet, it's like, yurked.
Yep, exactly. Like, everything's shaking
it's
on camera.
So good.
And it's such a good bonding experience.
Yes. Oh, it really is. Then there's
which,
that.
Like, really sets up for the death scene later. And so, in a weird way, oh like, God, one of the worst scenes.
Not even a scene, like, a run. Yeah. The death run of yeah. Lenny Summers.
I had exactly. to pause the game and just go,
right?
Lenny, no.
Yeah.
I was like, no,
I was writing the walkthrough while I was doing this, and I was like, I need to stop. For a second yeah. in process that Lenny just got killed.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit tricked with how the emotions I was experiencing when Lenny dies because I'm like, those missions seemed off to me. I'm like, why am I hanging out with Lenny? Go hang out with Lenny, you know, is like one of the missions. yeah. I'm like, what? All right.
Because
I
Lenny's
guess.
Rad.
Yeah, well, yeah. Lenny's awesome. He has a really cool character, but story-wise, the writers are like, well, we need to force that connection with
but
Lenny.
But I mean, no,
they
could have just as easily been Charles or Sadie or Javier, though.
I think the idea
Well, I mean,
was,
it couldn't have been Javier,
yeah.
who right. is someone else who we definitely don't see get built up to be crazy enough. Mm, but
yeah.
that's another
yeah, who doesn't get the
later.
Chance to anyway.
Yeah,
he doesn't get the chance to.
I didn't expect him to die. It still hit me, but I was kind of like, that's why he had me do all those missions with him.
I mean, yeah, there
sort
is
of.
Definitely that. But
I mean,
like,
yeah. yeah, there's a lot more depth to his character, I think, than that. Like, I spent a lot of time just hanging around in the campfire
yeah.
right.
In your campgrounds because you have those like random interactions that you can kind of just like listen in on.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were Lenny. And like one of the ones that I loved was Lenny talking to Dutch about some book that he was reading.
Oh yeah.
And they were having this like intellectual debate about the author
yeah.
and about like, you know, progressive qualities at that era, which
right.
is like really interesting
like,
to
oh.
think about back then. Yeah. And
well,
so
especially
because
that's at the Clemens Point camp, right? In the middle of the South.
Yeah, exactly. So you do, yeah, like it's really surfacing at that point. And yeah. so Lenny is that character who's like kind of exemplifying this and speaking to it in a really intelligent way. And Dutch is a really intelligent guy. So he can kind of keep up with it. But you see like the differentiation there. Mm-hmm. There's so much like little story nuance to it. And it does build his character up a little bit more. But yeah, obviously like I hurt a little bit more because he was my drinking buddy. We
yeah.
had this moment.
That moment where... Arthur like spins the guy around because he thinks it's Lenny, and then it's not. He's like, "Oh, it's you again!"
Yeah,
and you see him about
it.
To throw back for a punch, and then it cuts
yeah.
to them all dancing in a line together. It was so. Good.
But it's great because it's like Lenny, and then it phases out when the guy's like,
"Yeah,
I'm not."
Yeah,
Lenny.
Yeah. Did you guys
so
go
perfect.
Into the room upstairs?
So that's no. so I wanted to bring no. that up. So there it's, are certain things for the gold medal checklist, and one of them is catch Lenny,
catch
in,
Lenny
the
in the act.
And if you go even before you're totally drunk, if you go up the stairs. And make a right, and then go into the room on the right. You can see people, you know, going at it
yeah.
in the room.
Is it really Lenny?
What are they doing? No, I'm just kidding.
They're doing grown-up.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
but when you go up the second time, when everyone is Lenny, mm-hmm. you see both
everybody
of them
is Lenny.
As
We're all
Lenny.
Lenny.
Yeah, I don't.
Really?
Think,
I mean, it's
I don't
the
think
John
actually
scene.
Lenny.
It's not because he rolls up to you like immediately after
yeah.
in his
mm-hmm.
fully,
it is fully clothed.
Right.
But it's just
yeah.
it's so it's a really delightful but completely stupid moment where like you open the door and there's Lenny on top of Lenny mm-hmm. and like
that's so good.
They scream at you. You scream. At them, everybody screams, and then you all run away. Like it's just like it was a Scooby-Doo moment.
So
like it felt
yeah.
like a Scooby-Doo chase, and I love it.
Well, that's why the drunk scene is so good because it's like kind of cartoonish, but mm-hmm. yet like totally relatable. It nails the jumping back and forth between the
yeah.
fact that they're like laughing hysterically,
so,
everyone's mm-hmm. dancing, all of a sudden he wants to fight people. He's
right.
running from the cops. It's just
my question for you guys
so
is how far did you make it on your escape run?
I
oh,
made
okay,
it.
So I ran towards
yeah.
the
wow,
wow, good for
I,
you.
I hit a pole.
That's I put that in the walkthrough. It's like don't run into anything.
Yeah. or you will get
good
arrested.
Good tips. I made it so far as the fence and then I tripped over it.
yeah, that's about as far as I got.
Yeah,
the
which
second time I played it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so you tried this a few times?
Well, I'm on my second playthrough now.
Oh boy.
I'm playing through as a bad guy this time.
Did you guys figure out what it meant by make amends with an old rival? It's one of the gold medal requirements.
For that mission. I think
that
it's
mission.
The guy that...
you fought, probably in the street, right?
No. I think it's the guy that comes up to you in the beginning and like
yeah.
tries to talk to you about a thing.
Yeah.
And then you're like, screw off, partner. You're dumb. I want
to
talk to Lenny.
I tried to be nice to him in a second run, and I still didn't get that.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I remember
do.
Running
Someone
into him again
us.
And like buying him a drink.
Oh, buying him a drink.
Yeah, like when you see him again, like I think you have the ability to buy him a drink.
Okay.
I remember making up with him.
That's what it is.
So Tina, earlier you brought up Campfire, and that's actually one of my favorite moments, or one of the small pieces, and that's the little romantic stories that they've managed to tell. And there's three in particular. There's one where Hosea just tells a story about his late wife and how much he misses her every day. And I was like, oh, that's really sweet.
He's so sweet.
Yeah, and Hosea was just kind of like the dad or the grandpa of the whole gang. And
Lenny, I think, hurt the most, but Hosea was a close second for that one, especially because we all knew Hosea wasn't getting out of this game alive, but I wanted it to be better than that.
Even he knew it. He brought it up several. He's like, I don't have much time left. I don't think he thought.
Yeah, he paints a big fat target on himself.
And then also there's the Arthur story with a woman who he loved in his life, and he still,
damn it, Mary.
Even though they didn't have a great relationship. He still cared about her, and he still treated her. Yeah, I mean, later on, you could go to a play with her and kind of go on a date. But
did you guys go on the date? Did everyone go on the date?
I went on the date.
That was not part of the.
I tried to put my arm around her, and it got weird.
I watched somebody play through the whole love line because I was so curious what happened.
I missed the last one.
If you watch the end credits, she actually goes to his grave,
which is super sweet,
and mourns his loss in life.
I saw that. I really liked that a lot. I missed the last quest with her.
Yeah, when you come back from
super passive
aggressive. She was super ornery about it.
Like, dude, I've done so much for you. How are you not?
What did she say?
She was like, I guess you'll never change, just like I thought. Yeah. And she was wrapping up some really,
I'm dying of tuberculosis.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't know that, but
I wonder if that's that last mission where it's just like, instead of getting the letter, she just tells you all that in person. And then you're like, probably. Well, here's the fun part, Mary. I'm dying of tuberculosis. And then she has to feel bad.
No, she would probably turn it around and be like, oh, you deserve that because you're an outlaw and you didn't get me enough.
No, Mary loves Arthur.
Arthur.
She regrets not being together with him. They were going to try and run away together. And then he went and got sick.
Likely story, Mary. You just want me to save your brother or father or sister, whatever's next.
Uncle's farm.
I think she did love him, and it's sort of tragic, their love story. Yeah. When it plays out in its entirety, because she realized she was an idiot, basically. And I don't know what happens with that character. We don't get to find that out.
I mean, this is what I like about
It's one of those things, what if her father had allowed her to marry Arthur, would Arthur still be with this gang? Or would he have settled down with her?
Or would Mary be with the gang or dead?
What I love about it is it's not perfect. It's totally messed up. Their relationship's not great. And so often in video games, it's like, yeah, it's a girl, whatever. They don't really develop into what an actual messed up relationship would be like. And that's what those two have. And then the final one is the engagement. Mm-hmm. It was such a sweet, touching moment.
And John used the epilogue, the ring that Arthur had.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that broke my heart right there.
But it was so perfect because Arthur really wanted John to live this family life. And all of his last acts were towards making that setup. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought that the sixth chapter kind of ran a little bit long after you got diagnosed. Just because, you're just sort of waiting for it to happen.
Yeah.
I like that sort of tone where it's that's kind of what that's
tuberculosis.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it's like. But I love the idea that, even if Arthur and John aren't super close, if you don't know him that well, the idea that, there's still, a chunk of goodness left within this crowd of people, and it's this family unit, and it's this one good thing that Arthur tries to save when he realizes everything has gone to shit. I think that's really, really sweet.
It's a nice moment.
For those who don't know what tuberculosis is, it's an infection of the lung. Not saying that you guys don't know, but it's an infection of the lung.
I don't know. What is it?
Mm-hmm. All right. Tuberculosis is caused by bacteria, and it infects your lungs, and there was no way to cure it back then because antibiotics weren't discovered until the 1920s. And this game occurs at the very 1899 or something that.
It's the turn of the
century. So 20 years later, he could have just taken some medicine and been fine.
Just been sick for 20 years, Arthur. Yeah. God.
But actually, I read all about it too.
Yeah.
And the medicine was just there were some people that they were trying to treat with it. So I'm like, he was so close.
Yeah.
But, you know what's hilarious? When you go on, actually, I think this is one of your favorite moments. it's when you walk with rain falls.
Yes.
And he actually picks a couple herbs to give you. So I accidentally, it's not going to cure anything for you, but it does help.
Yeah.
It helps like your breathing and your stamina. But I accidentally fed one of the items to my horse. So there goes that. And then I went around looking for ginseng anywhere I could. But
And you actually can't, you can't combine those two items. It was, I can't remember what they were, but those two herbs.
I couldn't figure out you were supposed to. But there is,
you have to put
the
them with yarrow root.
Okay.
It's an extra thing, but it's just, it's just a health
potion. Either way, you're going to die. So
like it's not,
fine.
Yeah, it's not like a cure. You're not going to be not sick anymore. It's just like a health potion.
But I really liked that moment of just going on a leisurely walk with Rain's Fall because Arthur got to talk about himself.
Yeah.
And that is something that is incredibly rare in this game. You don't get to hear about what Arthur is truly feeling at all times. And here you get to learn that Arthur had a son. Yeah. I had no idea.
Oh, man. I completely forgot about that till just this moment. And damn if that didn't hurt.
Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah.
This whole new dimension that I have to think about now.
It was like that picture on his side table. I'm like, what is this?
It all
like, and
comes
then
together.
It's just like, oh, shit.
Which is what I love about Rockstar's storytelling in this game. It's just like these little pieces. Mm-hmm. But
And it made me want to replay this mission because I wanted to hear more of what Arthur had to say because there's only a limited amount of topics you can choose to discuss with Rain's Fall. And Rain's Fall's advice and comments are incredibly knowledgeable and wise. And it was just very interesting to actually hear Arthur finally open up to someone about everything that is bothering him and his life in general.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it's a person who isn't like totally connected to with him. It's not somebody in the gang, someone who's going to be like, stop being a softie, you know?
Yeah. So he can get a wise, objective opinion from
him. And it's because he's grappling with his own death and mortality.
I mean, I think he's
like really reflecting on it.
Yeah. I think he literally says in the scene, he's like, well, I'm going to die soon, so I may as well talk to you about
blurt
this.
It all out. Exactly. Yeah. Weird fun fact is that tuberculosis is still a thing.
Mm-hmm. You can still get the consumption.
Yes. And it takes like many months of antibiotics. Yeah.
It takes
at least we have antibiotics.
A ton of antibiotics, like multiple different kinds of antibiotics over a very long course of time. Yeah. And it's still
awful. It's like 9 months.
Yeah. It's still awful.
That's really terrible.
Yeah.
On a lighter note, did anybody else go to a really fun party? That's my
the mayor's party.
That was my favorite moment.
Yeah.
But it's my favorite moment because of sort of what I was talking about earlier with there's the story Rockstar is telling and then there's a story that you're telling within the world itself. Mm-hmm. And so like the whole of chapter 4 there's a lot of great fish out of water moments where it's like Arthur's wearing a tuxedo know that he shouldn't be. But like that whole chapter for me was made so much better by the fact that I had this gargantuan ZZ Top beard going on. I mean, it was literally like it was a 10 out of 10 beard. Mm-hmm. It was as big as you could get it and huge and bushy. So like there were all these like conversations with the mayor and the mayor's aides and all these like diplomats around St. Denis being like, oh yeah, it's so interesting having all of you roughneck gentlemen out here. And then Arthur just cuts to Arthur being like, well, maybe we ain't the fanciest folk. And then his beard jiggles a whole bunch.
This is my gameplay, unfortunately.
I wish I had mine to put in.
Kind of guy.
I would shave his beard regularly. I'm like, you gotta shave, dude.
That's what I'm doing now in my current playthrough.
Yeah.
And as soon as I get back from Guarma, I kept the beard through Guarma.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I came back, I immediately was like, this shit has to go.
Yeah.
What kind of facial hair did you play with, Tina?
I went with scruffy at first because I like the 5 o'clock
like
shadow
two.
Look. And then the first time when he got kidnapped.
Oh, yeah. That was
back
a great
with a bushy
look,
beard. Yeah. I was I'm going to rock this. I'm going to keep it like clean, but I'm going to rock it. And then eventually I switched over to like long hair and then 5 o'clock shadow again. I like to switch it up. You know?
It's so funny you say that about the kidnapping because I kept the beard too because I'm like, he would struggle with this for a while.
I think so.
And like, I'm going to let him have the beard for a few missions.
Yeah. He needs a depression beard.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Right?
Depression
beard. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a very real thing.
Yeah. So one of my favorite moments too was what we already kind of discussed earlier was like building the house for Abigail.
Oh yeah.
And like it is a really fun montage which you mentioned.
It's just super it's like very 80s
the music
style
is like
yeah, and you press the button in time with the music to get all of your hits perfect.
It's really
good.
It
doesn't get annoying either because they actually like pull it away from you and then it just kind of like auto plays through the, like some of those moments the thing I really loved about it was the fact that Rockstar makes you go through those like QTE moments like really just it displays a level of like you're putting work into this, you're putting effort into this. Like this is kind of monotonous, a little bit mundane, but like you're doing this for Abigail, and like it just goes through like the months of work that they're.
So bad.
Yeah, and but you know you see time going by. I think actually his beard grows.
It does,
too. So I love that like. All he's focused on is making amends to Abigail, and he might not even necessarily agree because even the guy at the bank is telling him, and the guy at the saloon was telling him, like, oh, that space? That's what you bought?
Why are you buying that?
Yeah,
you
like
idiot.
That's the worst investment.
Like, maybe you can ranch goats.
Yeah, if that. But he was doing it anyway because that's just what Abigail wanted. He wanted to do right by her.
I criticized him so much when he just went off and bought that property without talking to her. Mm-hmm. It's like, she hasn't seen it. She just mentioned that she saw it in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. Like, would she still want you to buy it if she had actually seen it? But you're just going to go do it without consulting her about your finances and putting yourself in debt? What are you doing?
Well, wait, at that time, though, she's gone. She's written him off. I know. Right?
He needed to do the thing to prove it.
I know they end up together, but you must have thought, like, she's not going to come back to you.
Like, I'm just thinking, like, in real life, if I had a boyfriend or fiance or husband or whatever, and just offhand is like, we should buy this $500,000 car because I think it looks cool. And then something happened. We had a falling out and I left. And then he came back. He's like, I bought this $500,000 car and now I'm in super bad debt. And I did it all for you. And he
just
like,
rolls up in a Tesla. So like,
what's wrong with you?
A couple differences. One is that, you know, she was gone. Like Dustin said, like she was gone. She was not coming back. And that was the last thing that she told him that she wanted. Mm-hmm. And also, it's not just like a cool looking ranch. She was like, she wants to know, this basically was an indicator to her that I'm willing to put in the work to try to make the life that you think that we can live by.
It's a commitment to staying put and trying to make a better life. Yeah. I totally understand that. But my knee-jerk reaction was just, oh, man.
Yeah. It's a dumb decision to make. But I do like that he also gets to this point with Abigail where he's still doing the bounty hunting and she doesn't totally approve, but they compromise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's like, look, like this is who I am. You know, this is who you married. And I will do things for you, like build this ridiculous house on this ridiculous plot of land.
I just want to say, I'm really bummed that I can't wear this outfit in my playthrough. Just the pants with suspenders and no shirt.
Can you
look.
Not?
You can't. No, you have to wear it. You have to choose to wear a shirt.
You have
and this
to
was
wear
such
a
cute
shirt.
Scene, too, if you're watching the video. Yeah. They pull back and they just look at their accomplishment, you know? And by the end of it, when the house was done, I pulled back and I took 20 screenshots of the
house. It's like, look what I made.
For the most part, it's how you actually build a house, too. And that was an attention to detail that I really appreciated on the
I mean, I think that, look, that if there's, we can say a lot about this game, but I think the most prominent thing we can say about this game is that attention to detail is not something that was skimped on in any way, shape, or form.
I don't know, guys. Doing work in the middle of the night when it's dark out doesn't seem very safe to me.
That's how I build all my houses.
This is the old West. They didn't have safety laws or anything like that.
He's not even wearing a harness.
Totally not a detail.
Where are your hard hats?
Again, like every moment of that montage, like it was really sweet. It was great. Like, but I had such conflicting feelings because every hammer and every nail was an army officer's gun getting cocked. It was just like it hurt. It like really made me sad. Like when they stand back and they look at the finished house and they're like, oh, we did
all
it.
You see is the blood spattered around.
Literally,
it,
that, like you see the barn going up, and I'm just like, oh god, Johnny, no! And like by the end of it,
that's
like
the barn I tried to hide in.
But like when they take a step back and they actually look at it, like I had a moment where I was like, oh shit, all right, Rockstar, you're pulling some tears out of me. That's fine.
Yeah,
it's okay.
They sure know how to do that.
They do indeed.
I actually liked it because we actually get to see that he did have a few moments of happiness in his life before his ending, and he and Abigail, you know, they make up, they live in this house for a while. Uncle is there. Uncle is there, and like they were able to build this life together and actually be a family unit for a while. And I'm like, oh, so he had that, and that was consoling to me.
Yeah,
because I know how he ends.
Right, like I love that those moments. They're still very good and happy moments. I'm glad, but I'm just like it speaks to I think the evolution in Rockstar's storytelling that they can elicit that sort of emotional response from me,
especially. Just about Uncle. I didn't think I would care as much about Uncle as I did when he got kidnapped after
celebrated. Man, that was
well, especially when how you saw how he was kidnapped.
Yeah, because he had been presented as annoying. John just constantly like berates him for being lazy and annoying.
Arthur too.
And then he gets kidnapped and it's like, oh no, Uncle. And then you hear about it was Charles saying we might have to put him out of his misery. And I was like, oh, and when we finally see him and he's in that state, I was worried he was going to die. I was genuinely worried about this character that I didn't think I actually cared that much about.
Oh, see, I'm really jealous on that front. Well, because he's still there in the first game. He still lives at the house with you.
Oh, I was convinced that we were going to find him tortured to death.
Oh, no, that would have been terrible.
Yeah. You bicker, he's annoying, but he's family.
Yes.
He's your
and
uncle.
That's
and
why
he's loyal.
Those, exactly. And that's why those emotional responses are excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it also goes to show that like nobody in the gang was perfect, but that's what family is.
Yeah.
And so there were some, like Dutch, who actually end up betraying you and not
being
like that family quality. But then Uncle, who like still pulled his weight and sort of. Some ways, sort of.
He supervised real good.
Yeah. Well, speaking of tearful moments, another one of my favorite moments was when you're riding off to confront Dutch and tell him, like, Micah's the one. He's been ratting us out. Yeah. And, like, you know, the music plays and it goes into cinematic view and everything's like this orange glowy haze and you're just riding forward and all these lines from, like, scenes in the game play through your head.
Yeah, that's right.
Arthur's Last Ride, it's if just, you're watching the video version, this is it right here. And it's so, so good.
It's these moments that, like, remind me of moments that I had that felt like they were my own in the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm just remembering, like, oh yeah, I had that thing with, like, a random encounter or a stranger mission or a main mission. And it, like, reminded me both of all of the moments that I shared with people, but also, like, how amazing the pacing of the game was in, like, moving from big story mission to, like, small stranger mission to, like, random encounter mission.
It's that whole thing of, like, the gang and you and the world, like, all existing in the same place together. And I think it was really funny because I liked this musical interlude so much more than, because they do it a couple of times in this. The one when you get back from chapter 5, when you come back from Guarma and have to ride back to Shady Bell, I don't know about you guys, I was not a big fan of that moment. Like, it felt like, well, so in the first game, there's that moment where you learn that Bill is hiding in Mexico with Javier and you have to ride to Mexico and they play that really cool song as you ride in, which was, you know, to me, it was a cool thing. It was not like, oh my God, like a lot of people kind of have as like sort of
it was,
a
oh my
religious
God
experience
me.
In so, the game. Right. That's incredible. What that is for some people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they were like the one when I got back from Guarma, when I played through that the first time, it felt like they were trying to catch lightning in a bottle twice. Mm-hmm. And it just was kind of like, all right, I know why you guys are doing this, but this isn't that super great. But then when this one showed up later, I was completely not expecting it.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great moment because you do get all those moments where, and it's cool too because it's depending on how you played it.
Yeah.
Like I replayed it earlier with super low honor and like it's the music is still the same song, but like it goes through and it's like, you know, instead of the one where that dude who's, who you kind of like intimidated to death, instead of his son being like, "You saved me, mister. I don't know what we'd have done without you." Instead, he was like, "Please don't kill me, mister."
Yeah.
And then Arthur's just like, "Oh, you think I care about killing anybody?" And I'm just like, "Oh my God, this is so much more hardcore."
Yeah. You have to reckon with what you've done.
Yeah. It's so good.
It is. And so for me, I felt like, you know, because Arthur the whole time is grappling with like, who am I? Am I Dutch? Is Dutch bad? Am I bad? Is Dutch good? You know, all of these questions. And so in this moment when he's reflecting back, for me, it kind of reminds me like, yeah, I did some good things. You know, maybe I led this lifestyle of a, you know, a crime, someone who's like involved in crime all the time. But at the same time, like there were things that I did that I believed in that I believed Dutch was part of too. So I really wrapped the story up in this like amazing, really natural feeling way that I immediately connected to because of all the things that I did in the game. Like it was just perfect. That moment.
Especially leading into that like final confrontation where it's just like, just totally reinforcing who you have chosen to be in this game. And like just letting you really live in that and own that all the way there. Cause it's a lengthy ride sequence. And then when you get off the horse, you're like, all right, I know exactly how this is going to play out. No, I don't. But I know exactly how I'm going to choose to act throughout.
And you know what? If I was riding off to confront Dutch, like my father figure, I'd be reflecting the hell.
Oh,
of my
hell yes.
Too. Like it just felt very realistic in that way.
I think to him, he's riding to his death. Mm-hmm. Like one way or another,
he knows
he's like he's either he's gonna kill me or Micah's gonna kill me. This will be my end.
There's that wonderful moment with him when he rescues Abigail from the Pinkertons and like he puts her on Sadie's horse and she starts to be like, oh Arthur, and he's just like, don't know Arthur me. And it was like that moment where he's just kind of like, nope, this is happening. Like I need you to go take this money. Please be better than we were.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I'm just getting beclimbed just thinking about it. It was so good. It's like, again, like it just shows you how far Rockstar's come as storytellers since GTA 5 and the first Red Dead. But like, it's just really impressive that they can continuously throughout, you know, a 40-minute chunk of gameplay make me feel so many different things, both good and bad. It's really impressive, and I liked it a lot, and I had a lot of feelings about it.
Casey, did the musical interludes do anything for you?
The first time I encountered it, I was definitely taken by surprise. I didn't understand, but
was it weird?
It made me think that this was a more important moment than other moments I had experienced before. It made me pay a little bit more attention to what was going on because it made me think, okay, what is about to happen is an important beat in the game.
Which is accurate. Yeah, it's definitely like a kind of like tone-setting tool that they use.
I liked it. I liked them. I don't think it took me out of the game or anything. It just made me more interested.
I remember the Mexico moment in the first game just being this incredible. I was like, oh, wow, this is so cool. I don't even remember what was happening that made me have that response. But I remember it being one of my favorite moments of the original Red Dead Redemption. So for you, that's your first experience. And for you, it's just like a heightened awareness that something big is going to happen. Maybe it's because like during that mission, you're finally going to take on Bill. Is that what it was?
In Red Dead 1. First one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you're going to Mexico. I don't exactly remember what the context was. It was like that you're going there to find Bill.
I think it was a final confrontation-like thing.
Right. So it's like, okay, yeah. Well, because the song that they play in that one, it's not the Compass song. It's, I forget the name of the other
one. But to me, it's telling me, like Casey said, hey, you're finishing the story.
Yeah.
This is the end one way or another.
Right. Like for the first game's one, it felt very much like, you know, this is you processing a failure mm-hmm. and sort of reconciling with your issues to succeed again in the future.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, this moment at the end where you're riding off to confront Dutch Micah and the rest is just all about reckoning with what you've done. Mm-hmm. It's really, really well done. Mm.
So since we're talking about the ending and like the fate of all of these characters, how do we feel about Arthur and how do we feel about the rest of the gang members? You know, do you feel satisfied with how that everything wrapped up in the end?
The way I played Arthur was as a good guy, so I feel pretty good about how things wrapped up. Because I was mainlining the game and I didn't get to a lot of the side stuff, I totally would have did all the dating stuff had I had time with Mary, mm-hmm. just to see how that played out. There's a lot of stranger missions I didn't get to do, but I really, really like Arthur, and I like the way that he was presented, and it was really sad the way that he went out at the end. Like,
so
he basically just dies because of his tuberculosis.
Okay, so you got the good, good ending.
Yeah, but so not because he lost his fight.
So there are four endings, variations? To my understanding. Yeah. There's the big choice at the end of the mission is, you know, obviously you go whether to help John get away and reach his family, or you go back for the money, and you can do those things regardless of what your honor level is. So there's four choices. Basically, go help John, high honor, low honor. Go get the money, high honor, low honor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the high honor, low honor is, I feel like it's the one that we mostly probably all.
So I was high honor, help John.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
same
me
here.
Too.
Yeah. Yep.
Because that's the right choice.
Because we're good people. Yeah.
We're good people.
Yeah. Nobody played Blackadder in the office. I was really surprised. Ryan did, but he's not through the game yet.
Well, so I went back and I replayed the ending and I used a cheat to have super low honor.
Yeah.
And the other ending, so let's talk about the good ending because we all got it. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is, if there is a canon ending to this, to Arthur's story, it's mm-hmm. that one.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that moment where it's like Dutch gives up on you and it's just so sad, mm-hmm. but he also prevents you from getting murdered by some asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then like in that last moment, you're like, you know what? No, John got away. I did as best I could. And you get to see the sunrise.
Is that really the better way to go though? Just slowly bleeding out with that sounds like a terrible slow way.
It really does sound like an awful way to die. But from a visual storytelling standpoint, it's gorgeous. Yeah.
I don't think Arthur feels like he deserved a better ending. Mm-hmm. I think as a character, he's like, this is what I deserve, but I get a little bit of beauty here at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was like, I was trying to imagine what that character would be thinking. And I'm like, for him, I think this is a good ending.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah.
I think that made me feel good.
I think he feels comforted by the fact that he feels that John made it out okay. That's all he wanted in the end. And mm-hmm. I think he saw a lot of himself in John. Like, even though in the beginning they were like very kind of at odds because of him bailing on the group for a while, because you know, at the same time, Arthur still feels like loyalty, dedication mm-hmm. is number one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in the end, he saw a lot of himself in John and just wanted him to live the life that he didn't live. And the fact that he had a kid also kind of like comes into play there too.
Yeah.
Because he has a chance to have a father son relationship that he was never able to foster.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he has this opportunity now to like, yeah, to reflect on the fact that he's like made that opportunity viable for John and if not him.
Yeah. I really love the way that they handled the good ending.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did the bad ending and it was like pretty rough.
It's grim, yeah. right?
It's really grim. So like you go back for the money.
Yeah.
You go back for the money and then like Micah stabs you in the back and then mm-hmm. like you knife fight for a few minutes and then like he stabs you again and then like a fourth time. Mm-hmm. And then Dutch comes by and he could still totally save you even though you've been stabbed a bunch. And he just walks away and then Micah, like you're like crawling away really pitifully.
Yeah.
And then
really
he
pitiful.
Just stabbed you in the back one last time and you just slowly Oof. Die and that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you can't give that to Micah. You can't play bad.
Yeah. I will say I like that your spirit animal changes depending on how good or bad you were.
Oh, what's mm-hmm. the bad one?
It's a wolf.
Oh,
so when you,
I thought it was like snakes and wolves. Like it's kind of.
I didn't see all of them. I only saw the very last one.
Fair.
So like in the in the good ending, you see real bad. You know, as he like looks out and the sun comes up, you have that really great dissolve where it's the deer, the stag, kind of like drinking from the river and like riding off into the top of a hill. Mm. In the bad one, it's a wolf in the rain going into a cave, and then it just like cuts back to Arthur. And he's like, bleh. It's like, oh bummer.
And interestingly, you actually do have those moments where you see like. If you're playing as a good character, you have the deer or you have the wolf in your dreams too.
Yeah, so
like
which is super
sleeping,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're sleeping and you see them or like there are time jumps and stuff. Yeah. There he is. There's that wolf right there if you're watching the video version.
But he's so pretty. How could he be evil?
It would be hard for me to break down each of the gang members, but the ones I connected with the most were Marsden, Dutch, Micah in a negative way, Sadie Adler.
Love Sadie.
Mm-hmm. She's
and
a great one. Yeah.
I think those are the four that I remember, just looking at the photo behind you, mm-hmm. the most out of all the gang members. There was sort of the mother of the camp who kind of took
Susan!
Everybody. Yeah.
And
Miss Grimshaw.
When Susan killed Molly, I was like, oh, damn, Susan.
She was not messing around.
That was her can I speak to your manager voice, and she meant it.
She spoke to that manager.
She spoke to that manager all the way to the bank.
So those,
I felt
those
so bad
were the,
for her at the end, too. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Getting gut shot.
Those were the gang members that impacted me the most, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I was really upset when Sean died because I felt like we just rescued him. Yeah. It's like, oh, I got to learn about this cute Irish boy. And then he got shot in the head in front
of
me.
It was
he was
real
a bit of a throwaway. I don't think many people
see. I liked Sean enough as a character, but it was just like, you're either going to disappear, like you're going to run away or become a traitor, or you're just going to die.
Well, there's so many characters you need that balance.
Yeah, you just kind of do need cannon fodder sometimes. Exactly. And he was fun cannon fodder. Like, that was the thing. Well, because like any time you rode back to the camp and heard him talking about this, telling a story or interacting with other people, like he was a very lively, very kind of. Rough around the edges character, but I liked him a lot. And so it still hurt. Like, this is the great thing that they do with all of these characters. Cause like even Sean, even, you know, Abigail, I wasn't super invested in Abigail for much of the game really until about the end of the last act, but they do this really well with everyone where they just really do flesh each person in your group out as an individual.
They give them their moments.
Yeah. Exactly.
And Abigail's was, you know, the epilogue.
So exactly. Yeah. Abigail's the epilogue in that end where she kills Milton too. Like, it's like, ooh, girl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially if you take the time to hang out around camp and listen to everyone's conversations.
It adds so much depth.
Yeah. And if you do like the optional activities, like did you guys go fishing with Kieran?
No.
I don't know.
Okay. So we all know what happens to Kieran,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Poor
so
Kieran.
That
tried.
He really did try.
I felt so bad. He's honestly one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Like, I felt so bad for that little Irish boy.
He's the opposite of Dutch.
He's just so earnest. And he's just like, I literally have nowhere else to turn to. The world will eat me alive if you don't take me in. Please, I'm begging you. I will do anything. Mm-hmm. And he tries so hard.
He
so like on like you take him fishing and like you guys get to know one another. And Arthur's like, well, maybe you ain't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then they chop his head off and put it in his own two hands. I'm just like, oh, Kieran, buddy.
There's actually one character none of us discussed yet. And I feel we have to bring it up. And that is the relationship with your horse. Everybody remember
Alpha 3
when your horse died, or did you use them as cannon fodder? Because for me, I had the same horse the whole game until the Sadie Adler revenge mission where a glitch happened and he died, and I was so upset.
Oh,
like we
bummer.
Know how he's supposed to pass in the game.
And that moment fudging hurt.
Yes. So unfortunately, it was a track for me because when it happened on the Sadie Adler mission, I just stood over my horse and I didn't know what to do. Like, people came in to hunt me and I'm like, I need a moment. Get out of here.
God, like, just give me a second.
Like,
God.
And I just sat there with the horse.
Did you reset your game?
I'm like, can I reload the save? No, like, I would have been set back so far.
Yeah.
So I just was like,
annual saves after every mission.
I had to go. Yep. And I got another horse and it was the same thing, but it was a boy horse instead of a girl horse.
It's a different horse.
And I was like, so the horse moment was detracted, but I understand the impact most players.
What did we all name our horses?
So my first horse's name was Horse.
Good.
It was the draft horse that Jose
It was the big Shire horse?
Yeah, because I want to.
He's a big beefy boy.
Big boy.
Yeah.
And I assumed I'd be able to find other horses that were his size and comparable stats, and I just never came across one until almost the very end.
You could steal him from wagons.
Yeah, you could, and I just never did. I was looking for a horse that looked like a Pona.
Oh, there you go.
I named my horse Matilda.
That's it.
Just
Rip Matilda.
That's just a horse name. I don't know.
That's fair.
I didn't even think about it.
What did the stable hands tell you? Was he like, that's a good name for a horse?
Yeah, I think so.
He did not like my name for my horse.
Oh, really? What did he say?
Well, so the first my horse's name was Alpo, and then Alpo 2. And then he got hit by a train. No. But Alpo 3 lived through the end of the game. Mm-hmm. But when I named my horse Alpo 3, the guy at the stable was like, your horse is liable to buck you off with that name. He's like, okay, guy, I'm thanks.
Sure it was randomized.
Because he knows two horses died before.
Well, randomized?
Yeah. Tina? I'm sure, the dialogue.
Yours was just random?
Oh, no, no, no. My horse's name? No, I named all my horses Farsi words. So the, like, because I speak Farsi.
Oh, okay.
And so the one that you get in the mountaintop, what is the name of that horse again? The type of the horse? The, like,
oh,
the horse?
The mountain horse.
Oh, oh, the elite Arabian?
Yeah, the elite Arabian horse. So I named that one the Farsi word for snowball.
Which is what?
It's called Barfak.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then I had a gold horse. I called that Tala, which is gold in Farsi. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
That's been your lesson.
Good.
Great. For the day. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And so did you.
And so did you. And on that note, thank you guys so much for participating. And thank you all for watching, listening, wherever you're hearing all of this from. We have plenty of other Red Dead Redemption 2 content on the site. Keep it down to IGN.com. Thanks, guys.